Good evening, everyone. Excuse me while I reach over and grab some more glasses. I'm Luke. That's Todd. And this is our special guest for the evening, Hayden.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us in the shit shed.
I love the shit shed. Every man needs a shed, right?
Yeah, this.
So this is a first for our podcast.
It is.
It's the first time that we've been in the shed with the guests that we're interviewing.
Get out.
So there you go.
Well, let's not make it the last then.
Look, I'm sure once people see this, they'll go, no.
I don't want to go
in this little room.
Well, I've been in touch with Nick for a while, and I've been busting to try the Dusty Barrel rice whiskey.
So, yes, of course, we also have with us, again, Nick from Dusty Barrel. Thank you as well for joining us, our Australian rice man. And, we have Dusty Barrel in the glass for what's in your glass?
Well, what's in our glass, whatever that is.
That's what's in our glass. What have you got, Nick?
Oh, funny enough.
Same to me. Brilliant. Well, let's start with that. Yeah. Cheers. Cheers, everyone.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you for having me.
Cheers. So,
Nick, that's beautiful. What's the percentage on that, man?
So that's a 48%.
So from the handwritten note on the back, we have 48% ABV with Australian sushi rice.
Okay, so you've chosen to go. You obviously did some research on doing rice whiskey and baijiu, and you chose a sushi rice, right?
Yeah.
Where does it grow?
Yeah, we looked at brown rice. So this one's up in the Riverina, up in New South Wales area. So close to the Vic border. So it's up in that area that was grown.
Which I didn't actually know that we grew rice.
Well,
you haven't gone
to the malt house with us, that's why.
No, that's it. I haven't. No.
I mean, there's a few crops that I scratch my head about. Like, why do we grow rice, cotton, and tea in Australia, right? Mm. All of them require so much water.
Yeah.
And, how much rice do they actually grow?
Quite a lot of rice there.
Metric fuck tons, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, it's very floral on the nose, very easy drinking, very oily and buttery.
Has absolutely no relevance to other drinks that I've had at 48%. I mean, this just tastes way smoother than a 48%. So you've done very, very well. Mm. How's it finished, Nick? What are you rested in?
So this was used in a third use cask, whiskey cask. So I wanted a tied cask. So I could basically let the rice come through and basically be its own star. Mm. So that's what this one's at.
Which, I mean, you can see the legs on that. It's just, it's glorious. And on the nose, on the finish, I get marshmallow.
Yeah, I get it as well. That's actually a really interesting note. What's the response been like, Nick? You've had it out for a good sort of 6 months or something, right?
People have been surprised. When I first telling the story and talking, this is rice whiskey, I got a lot of hate coming back. It's not a real whiskey, etc. And then I basically then went and told them, here, try this light whiskey. Yeah, and don't tell them it's rice. And then to get them to tell me what they get. And then I drop the bomb and say, this is made from 100% rice, Australian rice. And you just watch their head explode. It's great.
Mm. It's like me with the vegans and the pechuga.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an explosion.
But there was
to our vegan audience.
I mean, I've been through this process as well, Nick, where you get challenged by people saying, yeah, it's not a whiskey. And they can't really tell you why it's not a whiskey. They just want to say it's not a whiskey because it's not something that they've tried before, right? Mm. So what kind of confrontation have you had around this, and how did you deal with it?
Yeah, so basically they're saying, because rice, people don't realise it is a cereal grain. So when you say it's a cereal grain, they go, nah. And then you have that debate. And then you get past that point. Yeah. and then you sort of talk about it, and then they're going, but it's not a true whiskey. And I said, well, tell me what's a true whiskey. And you just watch them pedal backwards.
Mm.
And then you do the challenge nicely because you don't want to offend them. But, and then they eventually come around and go, you know what, I've had a couple of people go, this is not for me, but I can see where you're going with it. Well done. And then you got others just go, oh, on the nose I get an Islay. But in the middle I get a sweetness like a bourbon. And then I get on the back end, I get the marshmallow. What have you done? You know, what's your mash bill? And then when you tell it it's rice, they just go, wow, you know. So it's been a real mixture of emotion through it.
What was in the barrel before you chose, what had you had in the barrel before you put it onto the rice?
So the first time through, it's been two whiskies prior to when I put it in. So they were just a single malt, I believe, out of Riverbourne up in the ACT. So with Martin Pye up there. So I just got a couple of little 60
Have you had a Riverbourne whiskey before?
Yeah, I think I have.
The grumpy old man on the hill.
Yeah.
And just fantastic whiskey.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful stuff. And if you ever get a chance to go out to his distillery.
One, try to find it.
One, first of all, make sure you get a full tank of petrol.
Okay.
Because I made that mistake and nearly didn't make it out. Middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah. It's not can't quite find, the middle of nowhere, but
you can't see it find from the it top at of night. But yeah, it's an interesting place.
Yep.
Yeah. So
let me ask you that, like, you've gone through one expression, you've got a second. Is rice whiskey gonna be like on the Dusty Barrel menu forever? Or is it just an experiment?
No, it's staying. It's gonna be our primary whiskey. And because we're playing around now with the sushi plus a portion of brown rice just to see what textures I get through that. And then I've also got a Pilsner malt and rice. So that's an 80-20 mix at the moment. So just to see what that comes through. So, but rice it's going to be my mainstay.
Is certainly a pioneer of the Australian, the Australian rice whiskey scene, but the Australian whiskey scene, a pioneer, the only Australian distiller doing rice.
Well, you mentioned the feedback you've got from people who try it, like customers, but you obviously lined up a lot of distillers to have a go as well. What's their reaction? Yeah. And do they have a similar kind of motion where they go through and go admittedly that it's not whiskey and then they realize it is?
Yeah, I have. Especially at the Abbey, a lot of people started to hear the buzz from the customers about this bloke's got rice whiskey. Mm. So it made the other distillers come in and go, can I have a nip? And then we talk about it. And so that then became a real good discussion point of what is whiskey. And a good 80% of them basically said, well done, keep going, this is great. A couple of them are going, nah. Where it's more the Scotch side of it. So you just go, yep, fair enough. That's your choice.
Mm. And it seems to be a growing grain to use. I've been looking around and there's a number, I think I counted 7 or 8 Japanese distilleries that are using rice. Obviously, Nick being the only one here in Australia. You're here to talk to us about the Chinese brand.
Yeah, who the hell's ever had Chinese whiskey before? That's a burning question.
It is.
I like to ask a lot of people, right?
Chinese whiskey, honestly.
And that is what we got. You can put that one up to your.
There we go. So
that is the Grand Talent. They're the scales of the dragon.
Very feeling.
Have you had a go at this?
Yeah, I've had it. I did. Yeah, I bought a bottle and had a go. So I actually really enjoyed it.
Okay, so this is batch one. And I also have the first bottle of batch 2 with me. And this is one of the last of approximately 100 Ooh. Bottles of this one left out of 15,000, right?
15,000?
Yeah, which is a small run for
China. Yeah.
Right? That's a very, what we call small batch.
Yeah. There.
That'll 120. Maybe one suburb.
It's a lovely, it's a beautiful bottle.
That's a 750ml bottling.
750ml?
Yeah.
There's so a... they have an advantage over us because they can get Chinese glass.
Yes.
And it's local.
Yeah, but this bottle was designed in Australia by an Australian design firm. It's won design awards within bottling all around the world. And I think that's a really strong step forward for the whole whiskey category is to have a beautiful representation in its packaging. And I think Justin Zhang, who's the owner of the brand, did a really good job in briefing the design company. Yeah, look at that. Yeah. So that's pearl red. That's the stamp on the bottom. And it's also on the top of the cork. And the bottle remains the same, but that is the masculine of the bottle. And then this is the feminine. So that's
nice.
So dragons and culture are male and female. You kill one, you kill them both. The jade green is a barrel aged rice wine. Think of it like the PX of China, the Petrohemines of China. And that's the feminine, and this is the masculine. And it's ribbed for your pleasure.
I was going to make that joke and didn't.
If you want to touch it again, I can look away.
Oh, look, I'm going to stroke it.
I will not look.
I did go for the masculine one as well to stroke because it's just got a bit more girth.
That's okay,
it.
Man. You're all cool like that, right? Yeah.
Well, I did.
To be honest, I did it because when you're holding it up, I thought that it was concave. Mm. It's actually convex.
Which bit?
The whole
that bit. Yeah, yeah. So now, but I noticed. So the feminine version is a little skinnier.
Well, it's also lighter in glass. Like
and there's only three.
Yeah,
rows so of three. Scales versus four.
That's right.
Is there a symbolic reason for
that? Well, it's because this is the feminine, and that's the masculine.
Yeah.
How do you tell the difference? It's a bigger animal.
Right? It is. Yes. That makes sense.
Yeah. So this is essentially the basic way. And I'm curious, Nick, about how you go into the ferment of your rice whiskey. And did you take any inspiration from anywhere else?
Yeah, I did a fair bit of homework looking at Japan. I did look at China. That's how I came across Red Pearl, looking at what they do. And then... basically, with the I was just trying to learn how do you convert the rice to get the starches to get that sugar.
What do you use for sacrification?
I actually use koji.
Okay.
So I use I could have used the alpha and MLAs, but I wanted to do a more traditional method.
Yeah.
To learn what does it do, and so I did use a koji and the yeast.
Did you make it yourself?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh goodness.
So
can you tell us a bit about the process on how you made it?
So doing the steam rice and then inoculating it. And then basically in the cheesecloth trying to get the humidity right. The first batch failed. I got a got bacteria in it. Yeah. And you can definitely smell that. And then I tried it again. I cleaned everything down, tried it again, and then had a really good result. So it was just balancing that humidity and the temperatures.
Yeah.
What was the off smell that you got? What was the off smell?
Oh, you got a vinegar and an acetone smell came through for me. Right. And I was just like, oh, hang on. No, that's not right. Mm. Then I was talking to a few people online that do use rice in the States. And they said, yep, that's gone. Don't use it. You're going to get all sorts of off flavors and the like. And then they said, monitor this, these temperatures at these peak periods, make sure you're turning it, and then make sure you get that inoculation right. So it was really good. It was amazing how many people that were willing to help me get through that process.
Yeah, so it was good. The second time around, you got your koji right?
Yep.
Okay. So the difference between koji and what we use in China is that koji, as far as I understand, and I could be wrong here, is a composite of yeast, mold, and bacteria.
Yep.
And we use something called saochu. So saochu is essentially the same, but with the exclusion of the bacteria. And it's made by making a rice milk, adding those inoculates in there,
right,
then drying it out in large bamboo trays. So I don't know that it takes on any of the natural yeast in the atmosphere, but I'm assuming that at some point it does. But it's it's a lab produced product, right?
Right.
That's proprietary to the distillery. They dry it down to a powder, to a, and then they massage it into the cooked rice. Is that what you do, Nick?
Yeah. So I've actually, it's very much the Japanese method where they've got a, like a cheese cloth ball with the spores in it, and you tap it over the rice, so you inoculate it that way.
That's a top-down growth into the rice, and then you're churning that to mix it all through, or
So I tap it over the top, and then I mix it through, and I did it the second time through as guys were telling me to do, and that really gives a good coating over the rice, and you see the spores grow over the top of the rice. It's actually quite incredible. It goes quite hard.
And where do you do the ferment? Is it in your stainless steel tank or something?
I'm actually using IBCs at the moment because I can't afford the stainless steel tanks.
Okay. So you're using plastic drums?
Yeah, plastic drums. Big 1,000 litre.
The first thing I ever fermented when I was 15 years old was in a plastic drum. Probably explains a little bit why I'm the way I am right now. Well, the difference there is that these guys use clay pots, right? And they do a dry ferment for 3 days, right? So the first stage is they take the inoculated rice, they pack it onto the inside of these 20-liter clay pots. 3 days, it sits there, and it does, I guess, what you were talking about, showing the spores. And then they add water.
Right.
And that goes for another 5 days, thereabouts. So an eight-day process in 20 liters. And then it goes into a process like, think of it like Solera ferment, right? So 250-liter clay pots have got all of that stuff added to it. They take half of it out, and half of it goes straight into the still, right? And these are stainless steel, wood-fired pot still, old school, right? Only half of that 250-liter goes in, and then they put six more of those 20 liters into it. So it's constantly been added into this 250 and there's lots of them, right? There's rooms of them. And then that goes in. So that's how that process starts, right? It's one continuous still, and it comes off 53%. What does yours come off the still at?
On a final run, I'm usually running at about 72%.
Yikes! Cool, right?
And that's a gas fired still.
Okay.
Yeah. Now we actually have a little video from Grand Talent that
get us into place,
sets the scene for the brand, for the place, for the process. I might just run that, and then we'll go from there.
Culture that goes with it. Amazing.
I actually didn't realize. My hand will.
Well, you don't have a short supply of work for like we were.
There's
a couple of people there. Then again, they always have to really know what to do.
There's the rice pot.
Yeah. So this is straining it with the rice strainer. And this is also going back to a 700-year-old rice wine making process. So it's celebrating in a modern way. But it's the history of Grand Talent goes right back to the Han people in Jiaohu, which is kind of west of Beijing, if you will. And you can look this up on Wikipedia if you want to, but This is the spot of the oldest record of alcohol in the world, right?
Wow.
So they have clay pots there that have a combination of honey, definitely alcohol, and hawthorn berry, right? Hawthorn. So it's like a mead.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they go back 9,000 years, those clay pots.
Right? Far out.
So those Han people migrated from just west of Beijing, which is kind of middle north, to the south, right, in Guangdong, right? So they're actually the Cantonese people. Mm-hmm. And they've
loved their food.
They've kept the 700-year process of making Hakka rice wine thing alive. And there's not too many differences between how they used to make it and how they make it now, other than to say they've got technology and stainless steel stills. But largely, this product here, which is a modern expression of Hakka rice wine, and the difference being is that, you know, to slow down a ferment, right, like a fortified wine, you need to pasteurize it. You need to cook it, right? Stop it. So they've been doing that by taking those big clay pots out you just saw before, sticking all the rice husks and all the rice on it, mounting it up, setting it on fire, and burning it. And that boils everything in the clay pots, right? And then adds a smokiness to it.
Yeah.
And that is the tradition of Hakka rice wine, which is where that started, right?
Now, I've finished my little taste there. I'm going to have to pour myself another one because that's lovely.
Well,
lovely.
We do have batch two here, right?
Oh, if you insist.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. Let me, I will pour a little bit more because I just want to talk about what is batch one, first of all, because we haven't been through that. It is very oily, very thick and luscious, and
it has a sweetness about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have in here, you get this ginger nose, right? Which kind of takes you, and ginger for me is one of these cornerstones of Asian flavor, right? It just takes me back to any kind of holiday or trip that I've taken anywhere in Asia, there's always ginger involved. So I'm really happy about that. And obviously that vanilla that you get from charred American oak.
Yep.
So the barrels, and please help educate me, right? A virgin barrel is just a barrel that hasn't had anything else in it, right?
Yes.
So they're charred, yet they're virgin, right? And there are various chars. So they were bought virgin
multiple
French,
levels of char,
French and American oak.
And bourbon casks are probably alligator char, which is really, really burn the crap out of the inside of it.
Yeah, but there's no bourbon cask in this, right? So they're all virgin. I thought there was bourbon cask in it.
So being a virgin cask is I would say what gives it that bourbony vanilla taste to it, because that's where all that's coming from with a bourbon. A bourbon is going into a virgin cask as well.
Yeah.
And the woodiness about it too, because there's just a hint of sort of wood in there.
Yeah.
Which is also from a new cask.
And then you get something that surprises everyone, right? And that's that fruity toasted pineapple note, right? That we can also associate with tropical climates.
Yep.
I like to describe Pearl Red Distillery because it's built on a mountaintop in a tea plantation.
Right.
And I actually have some of the tea from there. And we do a thing called whiskey tea, right? Where if you're doing a flight of whiskey, brew a small pot of tea and use this as your palate cleanser, right?
Okay.
So that's been a real hit. And we also do sweetened whiskey tea.
I can get that done. I can just like sew my fingers and my people will bring us tea. My wife will love that.
I'm sure. But then you have a slight spice, right?
So what the barrels again that this is in? So virgin
French and American oak. Let's call
virgin French and American oak, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so typically from French oak, you're going to get a bit of spice.
Yeah, and that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so thick as well, thick and oily and luscious.
Yeah, and you know what? It's also, and might I add, we didn't divulge this up front, But it's the surprise that I guess people realize, if you've got the time, if you've got the space, if you've got the money, rest your product in 1,000-liter clay pots for a year before you stick it in oak, right?
Yeah.
And then you get what you're, because this is 43%, right? It's it's lighter than yours, Nick, right? But it's it does have those characteristics that you're talking about. Like, it's quite the mouthfeel, that luscious silken mouthfeel that you get. So it's the kind of thing when, and I get the same characteristics in a different form with the marshmallow that you've got on yours, Nick, and we've got that kind of pineapple note. And you know what? I call it a really beautiful, and I'm not going to say this in a bad way against guys who are interested in it, but it's a feminine whiskey, right? It's a feminine styled profiled whiskey. And I think that from the Whiskey Live and the Good Food and Wine Show we did this year, there were a lot of women buying this product, right?
Yep.
I was very, very pleased to see that. Oh, good. Yeah. We've got a comparison.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
One thing, Hayden, I was talking to a lot of people, they go, oh, no, I don't like whiskey. I prefer gin. And I said, well, this is a gin lover's whiskey.
Okay.
That's floral. So, and they go,
you've got our comparison there.
Thank you.
And that tended to draw some of the gin people in to whiskey. So I found that was an interesting tact that I took. But as you said, it was a lot more feminine people coming in and liking it.
Yeah.
So next is still all marshmallow.
Yeah, there's a lot of marshmallow. Now, I would imagine, what sort of rice are they using? Do we know what sort of rice that is?
Yeah, it's very short grain rice.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's essentially sushi rice.
Yeah.
In the same light as what Nick is using. And I think that the reason why we do that is because you've got more surface area of that to build up your saccharification, right? Is that right?
Yep.
So whether, and also in China or in Asia, typically, and I'm not saying this everywhere, but typically, if you want to understand how it works, short grain rice grows in cooler climate in the north. Short grain rice grows in the longer climates, warmer climates in the south, going into Thailand, all those sorts of areas, India, you get long grain basmati, jasmine, in the north, up there, Japan, in the northern China area, we get shorter grain rice, right? Yeah. Well, I used to live up in the north, right on the North Korean border in Shenyang, right? Incredible.
Interesting area.
Wild. Man, have you been? Have you been to China?
I've been to China, not that far north.
Okay.
No, never.
Right. Oh, it's wild, man. I get that the stuff that goes on there. We were trying to open a Marriott hotel. We actually succeeded in the end, right? But it wasn't without trial and tribulation. And I remember going on this drive, right? It was about a 2 or 3 hour drive to go to the largest single jade Buddha in the world, right? I wanted to see this thing. I was like, oh, cool. Let's pay some taxi drivers, and both of them were like the Chinese Beavis and Butthead. Let's ask for more money. And it was crazy ride. And for about 30 minutes, we're driving at maybe 150 kilometers an hour on a freeway. Out this side, we have just a shanty town, as far as I can see, and you're driving, and it's just full. There'd be 500,000 people living there. On the other side, rice fields.
Right.
Yeah, forever. Yeah. And it's just such a hard contrast. In the city I was living in, Shenyang, it's one of the most industrial producing cities in the world. So things like Rolls-Royce engines for jet airplanes and carburetors for Ferraris, the stuff you don't want to smelt anywhere else. And that's why when it snows in the winter in places up that way, it used to, it's all cleaned up now, it used to snow black. With the pollution, right? But now it's beautiful, and the quality of the product that they can produce up there now is amazing, right? The rice, the price as well. Tell me about the price of rice, Nick, in Australia.
Look, it's in comparison still with the barley, so it's not too bad.
So you can obviously, as a distiller, make a choice of what grain you're going with. If it measures with barley, what's the most expensive grain you can get in Australia?
Yeah, I still, yeah, the I mean, I look at it too as on the yield as well. The rice, the sushi rice was giving me a greater yield. So, it was, yeah, I was looking at that side of it as well.
Yeah.
So, to me, that the rice stood out. Yeah, it's a messy process, but rewarding one at the same time.
Now, I've just poured
batch two.
Yep. There's yours. Which
has a biscuity chocolate.
Yeah, very different on the nose.
Yeah, so the difference between this, because largely the process is the same until the blending of the product, right?
Yep.
And it's the same bottle. The difference on the label is that it says batch two, but in Chinese.
Mm-hmm. And there is a two.
Yeah, and it
for
is.
For those of us. That need
it is marked with the date as well. But the difference is that they've just taken some barrels from this, from aging the rice wine. And hold on a minute, you got to get a backstory on this one, right? So Justin Zhang, who's the creator of this, he lives in the Northern Beaches and he travels between here and China. And he's a part of the family that own Pearl Red Distillery, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he also really loves Australia and he loves Australian wine. And he's like, well, where's the greatest, you know, Australian wine that we grow than the red range? And it's like, oh, Barossa. So, okay, well, let's ship 3,000 Barossa Valley red wine casks up to southern China and age our rice wine in it to take it from being a white rice wine into a red rice wine, right? Yeah. That's innovation, right? Because we would all associate rice wine with being like a sake color or something similar in a yellow.
That's exactly what I'm expecting. So,
right? Yeah. Well, this is not that.
Right. Right.
That would have been the magic trick.
So if you're asking, what is this? This is rice wine. It's a fortified rice wine. It's 16% alcohol. And it's been aged for a year in a combination of Shiraz, Grenache, and Cabernet Sauvignon casks from Barossa.
Wow. There's a good chance that Andrew Young may have worked on those barrels.
Mm, right.
Yeah. So our sponsor, Wino Cooperage,
Andrew
Young, is in the Barossa.
Well, it would have to have been their product, for sure. Yeah.
Let's just say it is.
Yeah. And then the difference between batch one and batch two is that basically, well, We'll try this in a minute. But as I say, like, this is wild, wild stuff. When we get to that, it's going to like melt your brain capacity a bit. But this one here has just got essentially probably about 7 to 10% of the blend has come out of an aging for, I think, 9 months in barrels from that. So not a lot. It definitely makes an impression on the product, right?
So yeah, you do get more of that. Now, knowing that, you can pick this more of a red wine.
You can pick that red wine base in there, right? But not only that, you get the chocolate biscuit nature at the end, which I think really pushes the boundaries in terms of where it might go in terms of appreciation and awards. I think that's fairly close. But hey, Nick, tell me.
Yeah.
Do you enter into single grain whiskey awards?
I entered it into other because I wasn't sure where to put it in the category.
Yeah, I reckon single grain's where it's at, right?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I got two silvers at the last awards. So at Melbourne and Sydney for the rice. But the next time round, I'll be putting it into single grain.
Mm.
It's quite a step up from batch one, isn't it? In some ways, there's a little bit more going on in this.
Yeah, there's a lot more depth to it, but it is an entirely different beast, though. In with batch one, again, that's more to me the introduction to whiskey.
Yeah,
very very easy drinking, very very approachable, and this just takes that.
At 43%, it doesn't taste 43%. No. I would have sworn it was more than that. It's got a lot more flavor. It's not all watery.
And this batch two takes that lusciousness to a whole nother level, though.
Yeah. Is it still got the floral at the beginning?
Not as much. There's more of the red wine berry characteristics to it. Yeah. Oh, gee, the mason jars come out.
Yeah.
This is what he made when he was 15.
So what I thought we'd do, like, we're getting to the sweeter profile, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to put a little bit of whiskey in here and grab another glass, right?
Got
just any kind of glass, one you've been used for anything,
yeah.
Right? And we're just going to put a dash of this in. And this is tea from the plantation where the distillery is, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
But this is sweetened tea. And what I want you to do, this is a program we've had great success with, Nick, right? It's called Whiskey Tea. It's like, what do mothers do for Mother's Day? They do high tea. What do dads do for Father's Day? They do whiskey tea, right? Yeah. So you get a few whiskeys and you brew some tea and you alternate between your whiskeys and the tea like a cleanser, right? And it's a beautiful way to appreciate whiskey. And also, like when I was explaining the distillery, it's on a mountaintop in the clouds in southern China. It's literally, did you ever watch Monkey Magic?
Yeah. I had my staff.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you have a headband?
I did have a headband. Yeah.
It's that area.
This is like Monkey Magic's distillery.
Monkey Magic! Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I was riding on clouds as a kid. 100%.
Yeah. Some people say you're still riding on clouds.
Some would say.
It's really interesting because, like, this whole brand, and I will call it a brand, right? Because it's so well done. Yeah. But Justin's name, if you took his Chinese name and translated it into English, it's actually Cloud Dragon. But this here is a wood dragon, right? And we're in the year of the wood dragon right now, right? Which is the only mythical creature in the zodiac of in the years, right? Because I've got the rat, the tiger, the snake, and so forth.
Mm.
But this is the year where it had to be launched. And I said to Justin last year, I said, "Dude, next year's the year of the dragon. What are we doing with this brand?" Yeah. And he's like, "Okay,
let's go. Hell yeah,
yeah, this is it. Let's go." So and you launched this year as well, didn't you, Nick?
Yeah, yep. It was only a couple of weeks prior to you guys launching in Australia.
Amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did you become involved with Grand Talent? Because you've been around the block a bit. You've got a couple of accomplishments to your name.
Oh, yeah.
Flair bartender extraordinaire. How many awards have you won there?
I can't remember. I think it's a bit long ago. Isn't alcohol supposed to ruin your memory?
You did look quite young. And did I see horns on a video as well?
Yeah, there were horns. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, look, I
was actually hoping to see the horns tonight, but you've lost those. Yeah.
The story is that I had a very, very, very lucky run in hospitality, an extremely lucky run. And I did become one of those characters where after I won the world championships of flair bartending in Birmingham, I just was on this world circuit for years doing parties all over the world, like literally maybe three times a year around the world, many trips to Europe or many trips to Asia, Middle East and so forth. And I've run businesses for a number of years. I opened the first mobile beverage catering agency in Australia in 1997 and then sold it in 2009, and I went to America, worked with Food Network, worked with Guy Fieri, if you know what Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives is. And we drank a lot. I produced and directed some of his show and his live show, and I also opened his live show, which was fun. You know, it was all a collaborative creative process for us all because we were launching food theater into America. It was a touring model. We had tour buses and the whole thing. It was a wild experience. I came back to Australia. I started producing content for a lot of the liquor companies like South Trade and Bacardi, all of those kind of guys. I was lucky enough to be published, right? Not once, but 15 times across.
15 times.
Yeah, across beer, wines, you know, cocktails, food, sustainability.
Yeah.
And that's why I was touring in America with Guy, because it was like with my books and his books. It was good collaboration. and then came back to Australia. I started producing a lot of content, but then I remember 28th of March 2020 was the last day you could be in the room with someone that wasn't from your house, right? Before COVID lockdown, which was the, you know, almost the beginning of your inception of this podcast. Yeah. And I realized I was filming a series of videos for a client, and I realized I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. So I turned Drinks Network into an e-commerce platform and started selling booze. I got a grant from Treasury New South Wales to essentially list all the products from all the liquor companies and then push them live on Amazon, eBay, Google, Catch, Kogan, MyDeal, and fulfill all the orders through Paramount and back then Gateway. And then when COVID finished, there's, you know, the ass just fell out of e-commerce, particularly in liquor, right? And these guys approached me and said, will you sell our product? And I was like, man, I'm closing up the shop, but I can do it in a different way. And so now we've relaunched Drinks Network as what most liquor companies need, because they're shedding all their full-time sales staff. And we do it between 5 and 10 hours a week via an app with guys in Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Canberra, selling booze into, you know, liquor stores, into bars and so forth.
Right.
And punching orders in. So that's how I've been involved with this brand. And we've been definitely doing some good runs for the last few months. I think we're sitting at about, it's early days, you know, like we launched in March. I think we would roughly have around about 90 to 100 accounts now between Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah, right. Have you seen the difference in appeal between the Eastern Seaboard and Western Seaboard?
Well, we've not really hit Perth, to be real.
It is a fucking long way
away. Well, it's basically East Africa. So, you know, do we really need to go there to sell booze? Like, they'll come to us, won't they? Look, I love Perth, right? It's a great place. Western Australia, like looking out over the Indian Ocean, is an amazing spot, right? And it's so close to Asia. It's only 3 hours up to Singapore, right?
Yeah.
Bali. Yeah. So technically we should be there. But we just you just got to start somewhere, right? So we started in Sydney and got out there. Nick, how's your run been for getting it into trade? And what do the bartenders think?
Yeah, so far the bartenders, I've got two that are looking at it, doing cocktails at the moment. And just waiting for feedback on that. But just more of it's been locally being accepted. So hitting, and yeah, basically that's it really.
So you're doing a lot of markets and that sort of stuff as well, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So a lot of local content for me.
And what has the, and Nick as well for you, what has the feedback been from the Chinese community as a Chinese spirit, as a rice whiskey? What is the feedback from the Chinese community been here in Australia?
We have two divided schools, right? We have the ones that are like, okay, and they inspect the bottle. Okay, yes, and they buy it, right?
That's nice.
And then you've got the other crowd that go, tastes like basil. Why you give this to me? Right. And I'm like, because, you know, it's new, it's interesting. And they're like, no, get out. So there's like this very big divide. And like the please and thank yous just don't come into that. Right?
Yeah.
It's just, but that's cool because I would prefer someone to give me a straight answer.
Yeah.
It's not like they've even tasted it necessarily or even understood what the market is for it. Yeah. They just like no, because they want to sell something mainstream that they think that their customers will always want. And that's the big thing that I think everyone needs to wake up to. People are always in a lifeline of going out and living your day-to-day wanting something different to break up the routine, the mundane, right? So if you're going to buy whiskey and this one retails at $118, right?
Which is for a 750 ml bottle at 43%.
Yeah. That's a deal, right?
That's a deal.
And you're going to get a free bag of tea from most retailers, right? They'll give you a $40 bag of tea with it as well.
Right? And it comes in a the tube is over there as well. Yep. So the packaging is gorgeous too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's awesome value, right?
And the something a bit different. You've got the wax seal.
The
on
wax
there.
Seal on the top that comes off, and then you can use this here
as a coaster.
Boom, like that, right?
Done. Yeah. Look at that.
That's a coaster. Yeah. So I mean,
that's thinking
the two groups, and let's just be honest here. When you come out with something new, when you are challenging the norm, you're going to have friction.
Yeah.
We can't produce anything that is really good without friction, right? You need to have opposition. You need to have pressure in order to create something that is trying to emerge from the status quo and stick out and say, I want to be heard and seen. There are going to be certain people who go, no. I mean, we were at Whiskey Live. Melbourne, right? It was the first time we'd shown this in public, really. And the response was phenomenal. Do you know we sold the most amount of whiskey in the history of Whiskey Live on our first show?
Oh, wow.
Right?
That's a good effort.
Yeah.
And now
it's a tough crowd from experience.
So Whiskey Live from a retailer point of view, is a really tough sell because
some people sell out, six bottles a session,
if any, because you're not buying
as you go.
You're tasting everything. Hopefully, you're remembering what it is that you've tasted and what you liked. Mm. So it'll depend on how well you've stood out as a presenter at the tasting, and then you've got to buy it from over there before you leave. And decide which one it is that you want to go home with.
And by time, if you can remember.
By the time you get to that point as being a punter, you're usually
slaughtered
beyond half cut.
Oh.
And you go, oh, shit, too much. And then you just pick whichever one was the shiniest story.
We've had that experience multiple times. and left going, oh, fuck, I should have got the other thing.
The one I wanted.
It's not what I want. I remember now that I wanted that other thing. Yeah. So to have that sort of a response is quite astounding.
I think there's a couple of things, right? And I don't want to school anyone on how to sell their product, but I'll tell you how we did it, right? Number one, we sell, and if you look around Whiskey Live, you'll probably find one or two stands that actually have a price list.
Mm.
Most don't.
Yeah.
They're just selling it. And essentially what they're doing is they're just pouring free drinks.
Yeah.
There's a difference between selling it. You have to know what your features and your benefits are, and you have to know what your closing lines are, right? And you certainly can't be afraid to close on a client and tell them through scarcity or the price deal that's on at the moment what they've got to do next. And I think that those factors were really important. And I push all my team who are professional salespeople to close with a smile, right? Because it's nothing worse than sour close, right?
Yep.
And we would walk them up to the goddamn stand, take their goddamn wallet out, and tell them they're buying it, right? That's how fast we would go. We were not holding back. You're not going to see these people tomorrow. You sell because you've paid to be there. And
So how many people are you taking to Whiskey Live?
I'm not taking anyone. It's their job to bring the people. We're just working with what's
there. In terms of staff, how many staff are you taking?
Well, in Melbourne, we had Truman from Sessions in Arden. He is actually like a small-time wholesaler down there, but he also does retail for us. And I had my guy, Daniel Monk. He's from 30 Mil. He has his own business down there. He works with Jimmy from Jimmy Rum. And a bunch of other brands. He does a very good job down there. And I mean, he's a gun sales guy, Mr. Monk. So it was the three of us in Canberra. You know, it was just two of us, and two of us in Brisbane, two of us in Sydney. Best result in Brisbane, actually.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to piss anyone off, but we sold, you know, almost 100 bottles in 2 days, in three sessions.
Wow. Right? So just to cycle back to the process where you're literally dragging people to the to buy the bottle.
Yeah.
You've got two to three of you on the stand able to go.
Yeah, you literally, you've got to have a good relationship with the people who are running it. Like Himraj, you would take him up and go, Himraj, I've got a customer for you. He's going to buy Grand Talon. Tag team, off they go.
Yeah.
And then you go back to the stand, you get another one. You're not going to stand around and hope and wish and pray that they go up and remember what you've said. Mm. No, you've got to get that deal done now.
Now that is the complete antithesis to every other vendor from every other whiskey show that I've ever been to.
And that's why we sold 100 bottles.
That's why you sold 100
bottles. Yeah, because we don't have to sell.
Yeah.
Right. And that, and if you take...
Now, that becomes very difficult for someone like Nick, where when you go and do a whiskey show, how many people do you have on your stand?
That'd be me.
There's obviously the power of size, being able to have multiple staff on board.
Yeah. It is a luxury. Yeah. It's a definite luxury. And yes, we don't discount the value that we have with the relationship of the amount of product that's sold in China allows us to be who we are at this very emerging stage in Australia.
Yeah.
And we are just breaking the surface tension of rice whiskey in Australia, aren't we, Nick? Like, this is the first.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So we're very lucky to have those resources. And we work hard. And everyone knows how hard it is to sell booze out there.
Right? Especially at the moment.
Yeah.
Especially at the moment.
Yeah. But you're like your local bottle store, you look at Mark down the road here.
Yeah.
But they've got everything.
He's got a fantastic selection down there. It's incredible what he's got. But he's a whiskey guy.
Pankit is amazing. Yeah, he's cool. I just went and saw him before I came here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's a great guy. But I mean, like, he's got an Asian section. He's got this in the Asian section. He's got it next to the Japanese whiskey. Because when people look at this, they're like, oh, it must be a new Japanese whiskey.
Yeah.
I'll grab it. They don't know the difference between Japanese and Chinese characters.
Now, are you having any pushback for the fact that it is a Chinese product?
Yeah. I get that. It's this weird thing, right? I could be standing doing a tasting with a bottle shop owner, right? And a bottle shop owner would say, hey, Ted, as Ted walks in, right? And Ted's, he says, what are you doing? Taste this whiskey. Where's it from? China. Oh, I don't do China. I was like, oh, cool. What's your phone number, mate? And he pulls out a Samsung or he pulls out an iPhone. I'm like, how's your phone going, man? Like, hey, Nike, right? Everything's from China, man. Get over it. Like, this is who we are. They're our major trading partner. They're the people that support the majority of families in Australia through the trade and commerce that we do. We have to be in a position where we can embrace that as part of our future, right? It's not something to be afraid of at all. It's something to embrace and to work with.
Certainly, in a completely different industry with like electric cars, where China owns the electric car market, there's still that pushback of, oh, but it is from China. But yes, everything is from China, and we've made it that way. We've pushed all the manufacturing over to Chinese manufacturers. Everything has gone over there, and now to have a concern that it's coming back, and that's where our stuff is coming from, I think is a little bit hypocritical at times.
But no one has a problem looking at their computer screen or their phone at all. But when they're going to consume something that's a very personal thing for them.
Yeah. Their car, their booze.
Yeah.
But
I mean, people have got a problem. Like, some people just have a problem with everything.
Some do.
It's fucking exhausting, right? Let's try this.
I want to try this. Okay. I thought... I'm going to prepare. I'm going to have a lot of glass.
This is more than we normally have.
There's more than we normally have.
Good.
And we've run out of glasses three bottles ago. That's the cork as well.
Pour it in front of the camera into the glass.
All right.
Because people need to see the color of this, right?
Oh.
Oh, wow.
That's not what you expected, is it?
I did not expect that. That is
rice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right.
Wow. That
literally drinks like a 25-year-old Rutherglen port and smells like soy umami, right?
Yeah.
Soy umami on the nose and then full Barossa fruit with this soft characteristic of luscious rice wine, right?
Wow.
So, yeah. Mushrooms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shiitake.
I was about to say shiitake, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
definitely it is, yeah, soy sauce on the nose. There's yeah. a salty.
It's a savory and sweet. Savory. Right? Such a yeah. classic Asian like flavor combination. Flavor, right, yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
This is.
Get some and have it with us.
Jealous right now.
Oh.
Bastard.
Yeah, no, it's.
I'll send you a bottle, Nick.
It's awful, mate. It's awful.
Sorry I didn't get around to it before this.
No, you're good.
Oh.
And that's not what I expected.
Is not what I expected on the palate either.
Right. Do you find in that any familiar characteristics that you could pinpoint?
Well, definitely I'm trying to think what the fruit is that I'm picking up there.
It's quite a malty flavors. That's what I'm getting.
You get a little bit of that slight Vegemite in the back, right?
Definitely the Vegemite.
But there's the sweet maltiness.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
There's soy and Vegemite molasses on the nose.
It's got their molasses flavors to it.
Definitely molasses. And then,
but what is the fruit?
Well, that's from the cask.
Yeah.
The South Australian berries, right?
It's great. Very stewed and very. Oh,
so
typically as well, I don't like a fortified.
Okay,
I don't like a fortified wine. They're too sickly sweet for me.
Well, muscat's or they're
too, and they just have they hit me in the back of the throat with this ng.
Yeah,
it's the only way I can describe it.
I could do half a bottle of this with a couple of slabs of soft cheese with a chef, two of us.
Man.
It's no problem, right? I can only ever do one glass of muscat.
Yeah,
right? That's the maximum, and it's usually only once a year I'll take that, but. This is an easy going. You can also cook with this, you know,
chuck it
in the juices off the roast and turn it into gravy, stick it on your wonton, stick it on your dumplings, that sort of thing.
That is a multi-purpose spirit, that one.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of umami going on.
If you want to impress your dinner guests, pour that after dinner with some soft cheese. It loves soft cheese.
Yeah. Wow. I did not expect that. At all. And again, it is so thick and syrupy, and the color, it does look like soy sauce is in the glass.
And that's all rice starches to sugars, right? So there is no added sugar to that. That is all basically.
And so that color is all coming from the barrel.
Rice wine in the haka sense, where it's been aged in the barrel, as far as I can tell. Most of it from Pearl Red Distillery has a similar characteristic in its color profile. Some are lighter, some are more translucent, and then the others are like this, very dark and rich, right? Mm. But they all have that nature to them. By comparison, if we were to say, well, what does that compare to? And if you're talking about sake, for example, from Japan, we're talking about lighter style floral flavors, pinkish, yellowy hues, in there, and this is just very different in that profile.
Totally different.
Almost like a red rice wine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's been created here.
What's the climate like in that region?
It changes pretty much like if you've been to Hong Kong and run around in the summer and you're like, my God, I got chafe like I never had before. Right. and then in the winter.
We've all been there.
Right. And then in the winter, it's cold. It's quite the polarization in temperature, even though it's not far off the tropics. I mean, it's only just north of Hong Kong by about 200 kilometers, right? Maybe 300.
Yeah.
Where I was right up north, it's freezing cold in the winter. Like snow come right up the walls and stuff. But down there, not so snowy, just cold.
Yeah, wow.
So you get this high sacrification process in the heat in the summer. Yep. And then you get a long, slow fermentation in the winter and maturation.
Now, how so the distillation is a continuous still?
Well, this is not distilled.
For the whiskey though.
Yes.
Continuous still. How many times is it distilled? Twice?
Just once.
Just once.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And but there lies the tradition and the luxury of having rooms and. I'm going to give you an indication of how big the distillery is. It's about 750 meters long by about 70 to 80 meters wide, 100 meters wide. And
that doesn't compute.
Yeah. And it's so there's a lot of obviously aging going on, a lot of flaws with a lot of different things going on in there. Yep. Some are aging whiskey in barrels, there's a lot of clay going on, right?
And the clay you can't stack. No, either. It's so all one it's level. All one level, yeah.
All, and sitting up straight with a sealed fabric on top, right? So the tradition and the care and attention is so labor intensive. You could only theoretically right now make this in a place like China.
Yeah.
You couldn't make this in Australia. Otherwise, it would be like this stuff.
Yeah.
Times 10.
Yeah.
Because like
in terms of price, perhaps. Yeah.
And I think it's important to note for listeners, right? Yeah. That essentially, and this was the controversy that we had from Nine Rivers Distillery in China, where they piped up when they heard that we were making rice whiskey. Like you, Nick, you've had some black back, right? This is not whiskey. But they're taking Scottish, the Scottish single malt rules and trying to apply them to everyone in the world, which is sort of like not a very sovereign thing to do. If you're going to make rice whiskey in China or rice whiskey in Australia, you're bound by the rules in Australia, right? Even if you import something to Australia, you're still bound by the rules in Australia, not necessarily the rules where they come from, right? So in Australia, Nick, maybe you can help us out. Can you define what is whiskey in Australia?
So it's a cereal grain. It's got to be, basically fermented in and distilled. And then what is it? It's got to be minimum 2 years in a wooden vessel. And no more than 700 litres. So, and that's it for Australia.
Yeah. So in America, there's a challenge on Grand Talon to say that it's not a whiskey because it's been in clay before it went into oak.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So we're trying to work around this by educating people to say that it's part of the process. As if it went from a stainless steel to a holding tank and then into it would be fine. But this is just clay. That's all it's sitting in, right? So
your holding tank is a clay vessel.
Yeah, that's it, right?
Yeah.
Why don't we use it? Because we don't have a clay vessel to try it.
So how long in the barrel was that? Batch two in the barrel for?
5 years.
5 years.
Yes.
So by any stretch of the imagination, that's still aged for 5 years in a barrel.
Yeah. And then one year in clay before it gets there.
Before it gets to the barrel. So it's,
So that's where technically it would be classed as a five-year. Because it's
five years. Technically a 5 year.
We don't even put an age statement on it. How long has yours been aged for, Nick?
So mine was, the first one was 2.5 years and the second batch is 3 years.
Okay. So that one that we've had was 2.5 years.
2.5,
yeah. And as a 2.5 year, it's a young whiskey.
Still very good. Lots very of flavor. Smooth,
very easy drinking. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing that obviously there's a lot of pushback from internationals about aged whiskey. It's got to be a minimum 10 year, minimum 12 years to be any good. Whereas we're producing whiskey in Australia at 2 years. That is amazing.
Very tasty.
In that 2 year window.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think everyone's got a story to tell about the climate and how it interacts with the wood. And I think we've heard those stories a lot in different places. I think it really just comes down to when you take all of that noise out of it, do you like it?
Yeah,
that's really what it boils down to. Do you? And here's my compliment: I swallowed. and there it is.
Yep.
Do I need to say anything more? There is nothing left in my mouth.
Yeah,
right.
Done.
Yeah. And I'll buy it. Right. Well, we don't need to complicate things too hard here. It's a drink, right? And while it may cost more than the average soda, it's also consumed a lot less and on different occasions. But what do you guys think of rice whiskey? I mean, you've been in the whiskey business for a long time. Mm-hmm. Nick, I'm asking these boys here what they think of rice whiskey, not necessarily Grand Talon or Dusty Barrel, but what do you think of rice whiskey as a category?
As a category, I find it very exciting and fascinating because, yes, we've seen umpteen Scotch style whiskies from around the world for years, and to now have something new and exciting is very exciting. The fact that Nick was the first in Australia to do it, and the fact that it is so good, I think is a real testament to Nick's commitment to it.
But we also are slightly different from your average
punter. We are a little different from the average punter.
To experiment and try different things and see what we like and what we don't like.
And we've had the benefit of tasting a shit ton of different things as well.
That's what I'm calling on here, right? Yeah. You've tasted probably the vastest profile of Australian-made spirits, and you've tasted from gin through to vodka, from whiskey through to rum. And
there's
now
a number of whiskies on the shelf here that I won't finish. Mm. I've opened them, I've tried them.
Yeah.
And I won't finish them. Okay. That is not going to last much longer.
I don't think so. Yeah.
That is not going to last much longer. And if these are not taken with you,
no, the best is yours. Yeah.
Then that will not last long, and Crafty won't get to try it.
Yeah. Sorry, Crafty. You're right for deciding to go to Scotland.
Poor Crafty.
It's exciting. It's really interesting. It has a fantastic story behind it. In terms of the process, because it is so much different. Mm. The effort that we've heard Nick go through to figure it out and then just produce it. I mean, you're working with glue, effectively.
Yeah.
Show Hayden Nick's actual still.
Because
not only is he fluffing around with a unique grain, he's also got the still from hell.
I cleaned him.
Oh, no.
Fuck.
Talked it up.
You've talked it up now. Talk amongst yourselves while I dig that up. Gun.
Okay.
Sorry.
Explain, Nick, how did you come up with this salt weapon?
Well, I wanted to get as much copper into the system as I could, to basically clean up the spirit, as a first off, so I can run my cuts a little bit wider if I needed to. And the reflux that I get from it, if you get wind going through the tubes, it almost crashes the system, and you can just hear it rain in the still. It becomes a very smooth spirit on the right from the get-go before even putting it in the barrel.
That's a lot of copper. And you can see this here. So, that's the Gatling gun, all these individual tubes. How many tubes have you got there?
There's 16 of them.
And they go up to one condenser, or each one individual?
So they're all individual, going up to a head cap, and then it goes across the line arm into my condenser.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you designed this yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I was researching it, trying to get as much copper. Found a guy in the States, Henry from Gatling Stills, and then talked to him about it, and what did he find, what were the pluses and minuses. And he has a different system where he's got a plate halfway through, but I went all the way through just to allow it to.
We're looking at this, and there's a tetraliter there. It looks like it's hovering in midair. How the hell is that?
that's on a forklift.
Natural levitation.
Yeah.
That's the skyhook in practice.
Okay, do tell. Come on, Nick, give us the story. What's going on here is this tetraliter is floating in midair. Looks like it's feeding your tank, right? What's going on?
You've got a forklift off out of frame?
Yeah, a forklift out of frame. So that's just holding it up.
It's still magic.
Yeah, it's like something out of Hogwarts.
That's cool. And just for comparison as well, how big is your shed, Nick?
So it's 163 square meters.
Did you grow up in country Victoria, or did you move there to do this crazy stuff?
No, I moved there. So I was in suburbia, played around with spirits, learning about it. It always sat there with me. Did a tour in Europe, saw how they did it. And it wasn't until I was in the back in New South Wales at Mendoran, which was Blackgate Distillery. I was on a camping trip. Talked to Brian and Ganesh there and saw how they did and went, I can actually do this. And then, the rest of the trip, we just kept talking about it and then, started it.
Mm. Yeah. Have you ever gotten on the tools and done a distillation?
When I was 15, my parents went away for quite a spell to Australia.
Mm-hmm. And you blew up.
I started fermenting, right? A whole bunch of crazy stuff in a big plastic barrel. And then I set it off and I started to then bottle it and let it do a second ferment. And I was learning from a big book that I got from my dad's library called Self-Sufficiency on how to ferment.
Wow.
And then my brother said, why don't you try distillation? I said, what is that? He said, let's get the old camping kettle, which is literally could hold like about 3 liters, right? Mm-hmm. For a big family or scouts and stuff. And we got a piece of polythene pipe and stuck it on it and went down to a tub on the ground. And we let it just simmer for about 48 hours.
Wow.
And we had enough to pour about 60, 80 mils into the bottom of maybe 4 bottles. Mm-hmm. And then I added to it anything I could find from my dad's liquor cabinet in portions that he wouldn't notice. And then orange soda stream syrup.
Oh,
and I put a label on it called Eagle Rock Experience. At a 15-year-old, I was the life of the party.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. Uh-huh. So I thought, if it's a little bit, they probably won't go blind.
That checks out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the polythene pipe is from a field, so I imagine it was... clean,
used in some way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Look, I think that's a common story for most Australian distillers, really.
Yeah, well, I'm a Kiwi. I'm far more sophisticated than Australian.
The other thing, as a Kiwi, that was legal.
It wasn't.
Not back then. It's only recent.
But no one knew what I was doing. I was on a farm, man. Like, no one knows what the hell you're doing.
That's, of course, it's on a farm.
Yeah. It was good fun, though. I mean, that was my entry into the whole game, right? At 15, just curious. I threw my first cocktail party at 16 for 80 people.
Yeah, right? Wow.
They were all underage. And I charged them. Door fee to get in, right? Wow. My brothers, who are like 6'7", 6'9", with a doorman.
Yeah.
Oh, they would turn people away that didn't have a shirt on. What's up? Go get some pants on. You should see how fast they went, man. They were like getting into the club.
They were wanting some of that Eagle Rocks.
Yeah, well, that had all gone by then, but we were serving
the stories were still circulating, I'm sure.
Yeah. I was back in Hawke's Bay on the east coast of the North Island where I'm from. It's wine country, right?
Mm.
And I grew up right next to Church Road Winery. Or a Mission Estate, right? Which is a very classic, beautiful winery.
Mission Estate. And no longer exists, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I used to run in with my brothers with slingshots, with bags of Marco Capra seeds, and fire slingshots from a distance at the nuns having tea at the mission on the balcony. And then we would run away from the priest who would chase us with one of those yard rulers. Firing slingshots of Marco Capra seeds.
That is a youth well spent.
Yeah. Well, and then we would sneak down to McWilliams. So, you know the McWilliams we have over here? There was a McWilliams first in New Zealand, unrelated, by the way.
Mm.
And we would sneak into the winery and we would pour into a water bottle from the sherry or the port, like refill section when no one was looking, and then run away. this is what kids get up to in Kiwiland, right? It's good fun, man. That's where it began. Now look where we are.
Now look where we are.
Yeah.
Well, so where are we? Let me just see where we are. Look. We've probably hit our time because we don't want to keep it for too long.
That's all right.
But fantastic. That surprised the shit out of me.
Good.
That was absolutely, if you're looking for something unique and a little different, something
different from port. Mm.
I'm going to have to get my wife to try that one. I reckon, because she likes a port.
Yeah.
Doesn't like whiskey. At all.
Well, at least there's a good divide where we can share the goods that you're going to get.
That's why I have so much here, because she won't drink it.
Okay.
Or gin, which is it works for me. Well, it's wonderful.
Batch two.
I don't know which one I like more, batch one or batch two. I don't think I need to choose.
Take the one that's got the most juice in it.
Oh, definitely. That's lovely. So where can people buy this?
Hmm. Look, you know what? In Sydney, you can go to any Red Bottle. You can go to any liquor emporium. You can go to a number of other independents. So we don't work with the majors just yet.
Right.
And it's not our intention to just right away, other than obviously Dan's Online, which everyone is involved with.
Yep.
But we are about supporting indie liquor retailers and giving that independence that it comes from. It's a family-owned distillery, even though it is large.
Mm-hmm.
It's still family-owned. And so we'll just keep those values and keep striding on. It is very different, and we support Nick and his road into the rice whiskey business. Mm. Congratulations on your launch, mate. Well done.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Respect. And, mate, I can't wait to catch up with you next time I'm down that way. I can probably make it from Canberra in a couple of hours, can't I?
Yeah, it'd be a few.
Hold on, before we go, no, we have
to do a make.
We didn't do our new make off.
A new make off.
Oh, shit, can't forget. Oh, hold on. All right, I'm gonna have to give my glass a little bit of a clean here and wash that down.
So I've got new make, which is essentially 52% baijiu, right? But this is 6 years in clay. So it's been sitting around getting very soft and silky.
So the clay,
it's porous. It does go in and it does come out.
So when you've been in 6 years with those massive temperature swings of freezing your tits off to chafing your balls off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a massive range of heat. And temperature change.
And it's also quite, it's got a bit of altitude as well. It's up on a mountaintop as well, on a tea plantation. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of fragrance in the air.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. Where's your glass? Is this yours?
Yep. Go that one. Okay. Go that one. Thank you. Where'd you that one from?
We'll give you a healthy dose. Awesome. So, like, with this stuff, Nick, it's hard to think that it's 53% because it's got that alcohol sweetness about it, but you get that, you know what you get? It's not like any other baijiu. This is what we call, when you have sogrum, you have sogrum baijiu, you have very aromatic stuff. You have that bubblegum nature, that very sort of herbal, sweet and what I think Australians refer to as crazy flavor that they can't really define.
Okay. Yeah.
And then this is rice baijiu, so much cleaner. Mm. And in China, they refer to this as the clean version of baijiu. So much easier.
53%, did you say?
This is actually 52, but 52. It comes off the still at 53.
Right.
That is a bit too easy drinking, isn't it?
For 53, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's amazing how smooth that is, right? And that is largely the rice and the clay, but also I call it the talent factor. These people know what they're doing. It's in their blood. Mm. It's hundreds of generations gone into it, right? Yep. And there's stuff we can't compare with here. Is you've got 700 years of process to do trial and error to get it right.
So why is it only now that it's being turned into whiskey?
Well, there's a big whiskey market out there. They literally can't make enough whiskey for China in the world. Like they could wipe out the whole of the Scottish and Irish whiskey and American whiskey and consume it all if it wasn't on allocation.
Probably have the funds now to do that too.
Yeah.
So cross fingers.
I mean, it is astounding that we're not exporting more product to China because we're not making a lot, but we can certainly move our product over there.
Well, here's a story from China about Australian products, and everyone who's a distiller needs to hear this, right? If you walk into a bar and you put a 12-year-old Macallan down, and then you put a Lark down that doesn't have an age statement on it, yet the Lark is still 20% more than a Macallan, who do you think, what do you think they're going to choose?
Mm.
Right? Now, it's not to say that Lark isn't good quality. It's not to say that McCullen is any better. It's a subjective choice, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, the person who's looking at the value and doesn't see an age statement on one, but sees one on the other, and it's a better price, it's hard to turn away from that, right?
Yeah.
So what do we need to do in order to win China's business? Mm. I think we need to talk to our export people. We need to work on, obviously, excise tax. Is it paid on the stuff we produce to export? I don't think it is.
No, it is. It's paid on...
on production.
Yeah, on production. Yeah, whether you export or not, paid on production. And what is it now, 106?
It's well over $100.
$3.98, right?
Yeah.
Per litre.
Which is a lot.
Yeah, it is. And I think that obviously is going to help if we can manage that. And I know that there's an ongoing campaign to try and curb that. But outside of that, what else can we do? I don't know. I think I would arguably say that the excise tax is prohibiting growth in export.
Yeah. So out of curiosity, in China, what is the excise tax?
It's nowhere near what it is in Australia.
So obviously that coming in to Australia being retailed at
$118.
$118 for a 750 mil at 43%. You're paying the excise when it comes in of $103 per litre. What does that retail for in China?
China, a great deal more than what we would pay for it here. So in Hong Kong, you'll pay 230 Hong Kong dollars.
Business opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Export of
export from talent back to the Chinese. Well, that's what I said. Like we were saying to everybody this year, if you can buy batch one and you can hold it for 3 to 5 years, sell it back to the Chinese for 10 times the price.
Holy.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to have to edit this and cut that out and go and buy
batch one. It's probably down here.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm going to go and have one.
He's got it.
He does?
Yeah.
He didn't have it when I went in a week ago. He didn't have it.
No, he's got it down there. He's got it on the bottom shelf. In the Chinese section. In the Asian section.
Yeah. Next to the Japanese rice wine.
Yeah. Go talk to Pam. He'll sort you out, mate. Yeah.
That's...
Say Hayden sent you.
Well, let's try...
Let's get into that, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's try this one.
Which is...
I've already done that, so...
Okay.
Now, this is where you get the marshmallow, really. It's so floral on the nose.
It's very dry as well, right?
Yeah.
So the sweetness really comes from your barrel, right?
Yep.
As far as new mate goes, it's a
very clean new mate. Yeah. It's beautifully done.
How many distillations have you done on that?
Two.
On this, I've got probably around about four batches done now.
Four batches, and that's twice distilled.
Yeah,
double distilled. Yeah.
Yeah, so I do the stripping run, then final run.
Cool.
Oh, gee,
sorry, guys. We've been away. Hopefully, having a conversation amongst
So our regular Ian has joined us. He's from Perth.
Yeah, he picked up on the slight innuendo about Perth.
I think. He did. He said we don't know what we're missing about Perth. After all these, I can't read that far.
No.
Great to watch Dusty Barrel. Talking about New Zealand. Something needs to be done about the... Australia's high alcohol taxes, absolutely. And yes, it makes no sense that the Australian governments of either side totally agree, is actively inhibiting export opportunities.
They don't understand, I think, or choose not to.
But I think that we could have a conversation to say that, you know, prohibition was trialed in ACT, right, in the 1920s, right? And this was just a knee-jerk reaction to everybody else in the world giving it a go. But I would say that largely the pressure that's been put on the Distilling Association is only going to force a black market.
Mm.
Yep.
And you'll find black market spirits. I mean, we've got in Sydney cowboys running around selling 5 liters of gin at 25 bucks a liter.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's a lot of kerfuffle about Queensland distilleries selling three bottles of gin for $99.
Mm.
Yeah.
But this is because they haven't reached the $350,000.
Yeah.
Excise. And yep. As soon as they get exactly. that, their business will stop.
Yeah.
That's it. So there's a lot of limiters on growth for small producers, and a lot of limiters on growth for the industry as a whole. With the export market, when we are winning so many awards for the product that we're producing, we're punching well above our weight on an international stage. Yep. We could be exporting more than what we are. We could be selling more than what we are domestically as well. But the price is prohibitively expensive for most punters.
Is it Vanessa from Manly Spirits? Is it Vanessa? I spoke to her about this problem because she was part of the advocacy going into... Mm. You know, do something to support the smaller incoming distiller, and that's where this break came to 350,000.
Mm.
Yeah. She now claims that it was the single worst decision that she's made on that road, because for someone like Manly Spirits, as an established distillery, to have now largely 50 to 60 different distilleries in New South Wales coming in with that ability to do 25 bucks a liter is killing their business, right? So it doesn't do anything to grow, I guess, the ones that have been the fortunate ones to go first. But I would imagine I went to Canberra a couple of years ago with the Australian Distillers Association to lobby and advocate for this. And Stu jumped up on stage and he gave a speech, and we're talking to the few, you know, senators and people that showed up, a few MPs. But largely... they're addicted to the tax.
Yeah.
They need it. But what is going to happen is that they're going to have to deal with the problem that's going to come next. Look what happened to tobacco. Mm. It's now largely a great big portion of it is black market.
Mm.
I would say the same thing is going to happen with Australian spirits.
Mm. Food for thought, and definitely something that will be consistently on the agenda for the ADA conference each year, is taxation, as it only gets... well, every 6 months it jumps up a little bit more.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for having me, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes,
thank you so much. Thank you so much for braving my shitty little shed here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your time, man.
Thank you, Nick, product. Again for the rice whiskey. So everybody can how many barrels are bottles are left of batch one?
So about 15 left.
15. That's scarcity for you. So jump onto dustybarreldistillery.com.au to secure your one of the last bottles of that and get on. When's batch two being released?
I've just started. I've only just taken that out. So it'll be probably December at this time.
Get on the mail list.
Get on the mailing list to be the first to know when batch two comes out. That's going to be
A dusty Christmas.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. Then we've got, of course, our feature for the evening, grandtallon.com. And get down to your independent bottle shop. If they don't have it, they call you?
Yeah, they can look us up. Drinks Network, they can find it, right?
So
Drinks Network is...
drinksnetwork.com.au. So tell us a little bit about...
We have a program called RepShare. You know what Uber is to transport? Drinks Network Rep Share is the liquor reps.
Right.
It's basically a bunch of guys on the road with an app. You book them for 5 to 10 hours a week, and they go out and sell your product. If you need work in just Brisbane and Sydney, then you get that, or if just Melbourne, whatever you want. And they take your product, they notch it up, and off you go. Done.
Right. Yeah. We're going to have a separate chat about Drinks Network specifically, because obviously a lot of our listeners are distilleries from around the country and staffing.
Well, they all need help, right?
They all need help, so absolutely. Yeah. So in the meantime, though, drinksnetwork.com.au to find out more, and we'll definitely line you up to have a separate chat specifically about
that. Let's do it.
That, 100%.
Right. Thank you.
We are Aussie Craft Distillers shooting the shit. Thank you so much. Thank you, Nick, for joining us yet again. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you for
sharing your knowledge and your experience. And I'm really looking forward to finding out more in time as well. Todd, thank you as always. Crafty is in Ireland. Well,
thanks for your support tonight, Crafty. It's been great.
Yeah. he's been as helpful as ever.
Yeah.
Normal. So hopefully we'll hear from him in the next couple of weeks while he's over there doing crafty things. And come back to us in 2 weeks' time. We've got a really interesting one coming up with, how do I pronounce the name? Zymus?
Zymus,
yeah. Zymus. They do enzymes, flavorings, and
food sciencey stuff.
Food sciencey stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's going to be really interesting to find out more about how they work with a number of Australian distillers. If Crafty
doesn't come on to help us, it could be quite interesting.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, he's the technical one, so we'll figure something out.
Amazing.
In 2 weeks' time, we've got Zymus. That'll be really quite interesting. Join us for that. Thank you all. And Nick, hang around. I'm going to roll the credits, please. Like and subscribe and all those things that everybody always asks you to do. It does. We need more people to hit the fucking button.
Subscribe. We need 1,000 volunteers so that we can get a dollar.
And we're less than a third of the way there.
Yeah.
On our YouTube channel. Thank you all. Thanks to our sponsors, and we'll see you again soon. Cheers.